that we're going to be in Bereishis Parsha Beit Maimar Gimel, Midrash Gimel. We'll be in the middle of the Maimar. Somebody wants me to show them where it is. It's Parshat Bereishit, Parsha Bet, and then it's going to Bet, and in Maimar Gimel.
Is this accurate?
Parsha Bet. No, you're not way off. This is the right Parsha, but that's not Maimar Gimel yet. It's gonna be over here, where it says Rab Shimon ben Lakish, right below my finger. Got it? Okay. Now, just to give an introduction, does everyone have it?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're gonna take.
Looking up at the top here.
Yeah. 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 But it's Beit, and it's gonna be toward the end of Ma'amar Gimel. What the Midrash here is doing is it's showing, as it very normally does, very often, that different parts of the Torah are alluding to future events. And the point basically is that future events, even if they are negative, and God does everything for good, but even negative events were already included in portions of the creation. So here we have Rab Shimon ben Lakish, Posar Kara b'malchuyos. He interpreted the Posuk, and I'll get into which Posuk, as far as the different empires that ruled, that we Jews suffered from. Now, there were, it talks that the land before final creation was Tohu and Vohu and Choshech. Now, what does that mean, Tohu, Vohu, and Choshech? Now, there are various commentaries as to what that means, but I'm going to assume that they're all objects of substance. Sometimes darkness means the lack of light. Turn off the light, it's dark. That's one form of darkness. But darkness is also a creation. It's not only when there's a vacuum, when there's a gap. Darkness can mean something that is a creation, because what comes out at dark, what dark attracts, has a different appeal and a different nature than the light. So one can say that the darkness is a creation, and then there was thick darkness, like in the plague in Egypt, that was a creation. So sometimes darkness can refer to something of substance, but something that has evil or negative forebodings to it. So here it says like this. Reish Lakish posar kra b'malchuyas. Reish Lakish said that these kingdoms are alluded to in the psukim. So the psukim are alluding to different kingdoms. Now one is v'ha'aretz ha'isa sohu. The land was tohu. It was a chaos. What was the chaos? Zu malchus bavel. That is the Babylonian Empire. When it reigned, there was chaos in Amaris. It says, the Navi Yirmiyah says, Ra'isi es sa'aretz v'hinei sohu. I saw the land, and hinei is unexpectedly, behold, means unexpectedly, it is tohu, it is chaos. Even though there was somebody who was an invincible power at that time. That's really how Nebuchadnezzar is described even by Nevi'im, that he appeared to be invincible. Habakkuk in the first chapter also describes it as if you can't see how overwhelming the power of Nebuchadnezzar was as the emperor of Babel. But it was tohu, unbelievable. It was not manageable. It was chaotic. And we know Nebuchadnezzar tried to bring order into that chaos. That's a separate story. So chaos is a state of being that even pre-creation was imbibed into the world. That was the Malchus of Babel. Yeah, some say emptiness. Some say tohu is emptiness. Others say vohu is emptiness. Or chaotic. The Ramban in Chumash says it a little differently. But vavohu, what is vohu, is a reference that's also something that is somehow it has a rush. There's no forethought. Sometimes that's even before the lack of order, there is no forethought. Now that's what bohu is, and that was Malchus Madai. That was the kingdom of Madai. And Madai was very prevalent. What was very prominent about Madai is that things were done without thinking. But that's an opinion in the Gemara and Midrash about Achashverosh. Achashverosh, it says, was Melech Shaita Haya. He was a foolish king. He did a lot of things without really thinking them through. It was from heaven preordained, but he did a lot of things, making a whole contest among women to see who's most attracted. That's without too much forethought. Calling in Vashti to come in as a queen the way she did, because he was a little bit high on the wine, he was Toiv Lev HaMelech Bayayin, is also without too much forethought. You know, a person thinks straight, they're not going to ask the queen to come in that way, the way he wanted. All close off except the crown. Bisul Meshigah. Nobody who thinks, even if he's foolish, is going to come up with that if he's really thinking. So Vohu is the kingdom, the empire of Midian, of Madai, as it says in the Pasuk. Vayavhilu lahavias Haman, and they rushed to bring Haman. Esther said, I'm making a meal for you, the king, and for Haman. So they rushed to bring him. Hurry, hurry, hurry. You know, don't even have time to take a shower. Come to the feast. So yafilu is related to the word, even though in root, vohu is not of a root. It has two letters of the root of Beit Hei Lamed. But still, vayafilu lahavias Haman. So it's somewhat related. Some say that when you have a noun that's not based on a root of a verb and it has two out of three letters, it's related. That's already a controversy among the grammarians that even preceded Rashi. There was Dunash and Menachem ben Sruk and Dunash ben Labert. So that's one of the big fundamental differences that they have. But now we're getting to Hanukkah. We started with the Churban Beis HaMikdash, we went to Haman, now we're working our way into Bayis Sheni. Now here is something that I believe is one of the most unique midrashim that you have, or that one has. V'choshech, and darkness. What was the darkness? Zu Malchus Yavon. This is the empire of the Greeks. Now, normally if you follow the formation of Midrash, not only this Midrash, but just about any Midrash, I would expect to see a pasuk that refers to the empire of the Greeks as darkness. But guess what? Not going to find such a pasuk. We're not going to interpret the darkness as a reference to Yavon, all right, based on any pasuk. It's going to be based on an expression that the Midrash brings. And what is that expression? Shehichshicha einehem shel Yisrael b'gzeiroseyim. The empire of the Greeks darkened the eyes of the Jews with their decrees. Now, darkening the eyes is in one of two ways. Darkening the eyes can either mean I turn off the lights, I make you close your eyes to the light, which they had many decrees, 15 at least, maybe over 20 decrees, that were on parts of Judaism that illuminate. They decreed Torah is Zor. They said, don't learn Torah. Now, if I would have been the author of the Midrash, maybe because I'm not the author because of my limited understanding, but I would have said, how did they darken the eyes of the Jews with their decrees? I would have taken the decrees that relate to Torah. Torah is Or, Ner Mitzvah Torah Or. And I would have said, well, one of their decrees was, let us not catch you studying the Torah. I would have called that darkening your eyes with the decree. The Torah is light. I say no more learning means no more Torah. That's how I would have completed the sentence. But as usual, I'm being a little rude, and to bring out the point, I stopped the sentence here. That's what I would expect. If I would be learning this the first time, I would expect to see that would be the specific example that is given in the Midrash. And I'd be very happy with myself. However, we're going to see, I'm not so happy with myself because that's not what it says. Then I could have explained the darkening of the eyes with the pasuk, talking about the positive, about light and Torah. They took away Torah. That's darkening. I would have based that on a midrash, on a pasuk. That would have been pretty much par for the course for a midrash. That's not what it says. Shehoisoi Merislohem, the Malchus, the empire of the Greeks, it doesn't say Sha'omra Lohem, that she said, she gave a decree, but it was Shehoisa Omerislohem. They would say to the Jewish nation, to Israel. So they darkened us with their decrees. And this is not any one decree. It says it in plural. It doesn't say Bigzerosam with their decree. It says in plural Bigzeroseim with their many decrees. So that already is a hint to me that what I would have said as a midrash is allotted a red flag. That's not what it's going to say, because this is not about one decree. It's about many decrees. And with the decrees, they kept telling them the following. They said, Kisfu al keren hashor she'in lochem chelek b'lekei Yisrael. Write on the horn of the ox that you have no share in the God of Israel. Now, I could have written this, and then al p'nei p'tohom, on the face of the depths, is the Malchus of the Romans. But obviously today is Hanukkah, so I want to talk about this sentence. What does this sentence mean? A lot of homiletic interpretations in Sifrei Drush, a lot of Drush was said on this. But I really want to know what it means. I've tried to say Pshatim in the past too. But the language, Shehoisa Omeris Lohem, means that the statement to write this on the horns of your ox, that you have no share in the God of Israel, was an ongoing statement that they made. Now, we do know from other sources, other midrashim about Hanukkah that have been unearthed relatively recently, that this was one of the decrees, that whoever owned an ox had to engrave on its horn, Ein lanu chelek b'elokei Yisrael. We have no share in the God of Israel. Now, any faithful Jew obviously, although I have to say it, it goes without saying, did not comply. But what did they do in order not to be penalized? They sold their oxen. There is a midrash about Hanukkah that tells that they sold their oxen. So it was an actual decree. Had I not known it was a decree, I would have said, just from reading the line here, without any external support to the contrary, I would have said that every decree spoke this message. That's what the words seem to say. They darkened the eyes of the Jews with their decrees, that the kingdom kept telling them. Haiso omeris means kept telling them. Otherwise, it would just say if it was a one-time thing, sha'amra lahem. So we happen to know that this was a decree to engrave on the horn of the ox that there's no share in Israel. But it seems like every other decree really alluded to this as well. And the darkening was all around. Now, that seems to be the suggestion over here. I don't think I ever saw anyone who points it out within the language the way we're pointing it out. But what does it mean? What is that decree? Even if we speak about the decree by itself, what does that decree really mean? That you write you have no share in the God of Israel. And if you didn't write it? Or let's say one didn't write it and didn't have a share in the God of Israel, same thing accomplished. And if I wrote it and I didn't stick to it and I had a share in the God of Israel, what is the writing or the engraving? So one simple way to explain it is that engraving means it's here to stay. So the message of this engraving is these aren't what we would call in Yiddish zeitweilige Gezeiros, temporary decrees. They're not just here for the time. Every decree was made with a statement that this is a decree that's going to remain forever. So every decree spoke this message that you must engrave that you have no share in Israel. Now, why does it say it's on the horn of an ox? Write it, you know, write it on the wall of your house. Write it on your garage door. Write it on your donkey saddle. Why engrave it in the horn of an ox? So I think the meaning is, I've seen Svarim in a homiletic way say other things related to this. But I would say that it means an ox stands for its strength, but it also represents Yosef HaTzadik. Yosef HaTzadik is referred to as Bechor Shoro Hodarlo. He is the firstborn of the ox of Yaakov. What does it mean? He's the oldest ox. Now, what is the strength of Yosef? He was a Bechor, he was the firstborn to his mother Rachel. So halachically and factually, he was a firstborn. What does it mean that he is the ox? What is the attribute of Yosef is an ox? Now, an ox is looked up to for its might. It's also followed in its leadership, and it holds the flock together. Now, how do I know this refers to Yosef? So the Maral Miprag says, I remember the Mashgiach in Lakewood spoke about this Maharal many times, Reb Nosson. I'm not sure if they published it in the Svarim of his Musar talks, but Reb Nosson used to speak often about this Maral. The Maral says that Yosef was the heart of the Jewish nation. And the truth is, the Rambam has that lashon also in Hilchos Melachim, that a king is the lev ha'am. He is the heart of the nation, which that Rambam I don't remember Reb Nosson mentioning, but there is such a Rambam. But the Maharal, Reb Nosson did talk about. But they both lead to the same idea. And that idea is, what pumps life into the body? The heart. Yosef was the one that pumped the life into the Jewish nation, especially when there was a time that there was a time that the Jewish people wandered to Egypt and were stuck there. Who made sure that they were able to live with the proper comfort? Who held them together? And who made sure they wouldn't be looked upon as just newly arrived exiled immigrants? Persona non gratas, maybe? Yosef went and found tactics. He spread the Egyptians. He displaced them all, so nobody will refer to as to his brethren as immigrants, as exiled people, as golim, as homeless, stateless, nationless. So Yosef held the people together and he protected them. So he was like the heart. He was the one that gave the sustenance of breath to the nation. So what they're saying over here is the strength of the ox is what holds together the people. You write on its horn, and the horn, we know from Gemara, represents the strength of the ox. When an ox gores, ein negicha ella bekeren, first page in Bava Kama, that shtoisen, goring, is only when the horn is used in the frontal assault of the ox. That's called negicha. So you have your strength. Say the Yevonim Yimach Shemam, they did their homework, they knew about us, and they said to us, the strength of the ox, the power that holds you together, is your strength. That is the horn. That horn represents what holds you together. Now, what holds you together was always what protected you and your faith, that the Jewish people stuck together. We want you to stick together, but with a disavowal from your share in God. You're going to disavow your portion in God with your strong point. Sometimes we falter, we have this Achilles heel, whether we have it or in some way literally or figuratively, we have a weak spot, and sometimes when that weak spot falters, other stronger points falter with it. But they said, we're making a frontal. Every one of our decrees is a message to you that your main thrust, your strength, is going to be the disavowal of God. Decreeing no learning Torah disavows God, but every other decree does the same. Abolishing the calendar is disavowing your share in God, and no more holidays. Abolishing Shabbos is the biggest killer. Once Shabbos is gone, everything else falls to the wayside. We know that from the American Jewish experience. And other decrees like that, no mezuzah, or no privacy, no intimacy with observing the laws of family purity of Taras Mishpacha. So each and every decree was a constant thrust to what makes us strong. So they kept saying each decree was a statement that we're going to make your strength, which is your spirituality, your observance of Torah, we are lowering it. We are weakening your resolve and your unity. That's what I think the Midrash here means. That's the darkness. But again, the question is, where is the pasuk? And no pasuk is brought, so I certainly can't fetch a pasuk that's not here. But maybe the approach is that the life of Jewishness is light. I gave you one pasuk, but there are other psukim like that. La'oirei nisav neilech, to his light, to the light of God, which is the mitzvahs we travel. So there are many psukim as to what light is. So when we refer to something that removes the light, then the pasuk already inferred that that's darkness. No light is darkness. So it could be, but it could be that that here we're saying something more than just saying there's no light, because no light can mean that Yavon took away the light, but it doesn't say that. It says it darkened their eyes. So there's some action of bringing darkness. An action of bringing darkness implies that the darkness is a separate creation. So how is it a separate creation? Because once Torah is gone and certain mitzvahs are gone, life isn't the same. Life brings on new ways and new methods and a new mentality. So you become lost. Not only lost because you don't have light, but the darkness takes on a new existence. So I think that's why the term is that they darkened the lights. It could have said they brought light, they brought darkness, but it says they darkened their eyes. So they were instituting new darkness, inventing darkness with every decree. This is what I think it's saying over here. So there was, of course, we know a decree that they had to engrave on the horns of their oxen that they have no share in Israel, the God of Israel. But every decree spoke that statement. That was one example, but every decree was that message, that we're taking away your strength, we're going to weaken you and diminish you permanently by creating a new reality. We're going to bring darkness into your eyes, not just take away the light. We're going to bring darkness into your eyes. I think that's what the Midrash here is trying to say. I've yet to see anyone say that, but that seems to be what the Midrash is saying. Okay, we're right on the button. It's 12:15.